It's Saturday morning, and it's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I want to welcome everybody who, from the looks of the traffic on Butler, you're all staying home listening to the radio, because I sure didn't see very much
out there. It was really light this morning. Maybe it was the 35-degree weather.
It could have something to do with that, and I wouldn't blame anybody. But as long as you're somewhere that has a radio, and everybody does because you can get it on the internet or whatever, welcome back to the show. All the regulars, thanks for always being here. We're finishing today. It's a big day, actually. Today is the last of the shows for a 10-year period, and next Saturday, we start year 11.
That's crazy.
That is just nuts. Must have been really young when we started this.
You were a baby. You know what else is pretty weird? Is that next month, less than 1 month from now, marks the 5-year anniversary of the COVID crash.
Yeah.
5 years. That. 5 years.
It's no wonder.
How did that happen?
It's no wonder time seems to go by so quickly. It's because it does.
It really flies by. It seems like yesterday and also 100 years ago at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely true. Yeah. Anyway, if you're new to the show, try to stick around for the whole hour. We will spend this hour talking about things of interest to us that, generally speaking, have something to do with your money. I can't think of anybody who isn't concerned with their own money. But if you have some other topics regarding the same, then all you have to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, and you will reach us directly, and we will put you on the air if you'd like and talk about it. There are no dumb questions, remember that, and I can prove that to you, and I can prove it the easiest way possible. I promise you, if you don't know the answer to something, there are a lot of people out there who don't either.
Absolutely, and it also, when people call in, it spurs more discussions, gets people thinking, exactly. Gets more phone calls. So if you have anything on your mind, financial, personal, finance related, please call in.
Yeah, if you want to be nice to us, and let's face it, that's all we ask. No, we don't charge you or anything. So if you want to be nice to us, get on the phone, call. I will promise you after my 23 years of experience in this stuff that once the phone call is made, the first one and the discussion starts, the rest of them follow, and then everybody has more fun on both sides of the microphone. Everybody likes it better when there are callers with questions and discussions and hypotheticals, and even if they just call and say, it's so cold out here, I had to shovel it this morning, which we got a couple of those this week. My goodness, what a week in Florida. Strange. Anyway, again, I should remind everybody that this program is brought to you now by our parent company, Strivus Wealth Partners. You probably heard that in the disclaimer up front, and that doesn't really mean a whole bunch to anybody as far as the show. The show will be on at the same time, same station, same name, the whole thing. But when you get hold of us or go to the website, that's what you're going to find. So you can either get there by VanWeeFinancial.com or StrivusWealth.com, and you wind up in the same place. Our shows are always there, edited out with the commercials, and we have a blog, constantly running blog. You can set appointments, just all kinds of good stuff there, and you should see it because it's all modernized and spiffy, all that stuff. All right, all that said, this was a very fun week in so many respects. I'm not just talking about the change in the market indices, but the news and the markets and everything just kind of falling into place at lightning speed, where I noticed that a lot of the news anchors on some of the channels that I don't watch are exhausted. They just have never seen anything move so fast. The whirling dervish in the Oval Office, you'd think they might have gotten used to it, but I don't think he was even this fast before.
Well, he has a lot more experience now, yep. So a big difference.
Direction, a lot less questions. But anyway, it was fun. How fun was it?
It was really fun. We saw the S&P 500 hit a new all-time high this week, so that really confirmed the current bull market and erased some of the technical challenges that had been present post-election. So we saw a little slump there, in a pretty well-defined downtrend for about a month. And then this week, not so much anymore. So that's exciting news. Friday ended what was a great week on a bit of a sour note, although the losses were pretty minimal.
Yeah. They didn't seem to get worse all day long.
They didn't. It was very steady.
Like a big old sell-up, Friday afternoon sell-up.
We had four other great days or three or whatever, but it was not a bad way to end the week. It could have been a little bit better, but I'll take it. The NASDAQ and the S&P were both up 1.7% for the week, while the Dow ended the week up 2.2%. Both the NASDAQ and the Dow are still off their highs from December, but just by a little bit. The Dow is off by 1.3%, and the NASDAQ is off by 1.09%. Commodities had a good week as well. They gained 1.4%. Oh, gosh, I screwed up my notes here.
that's my hate when that happens.
Actually, I'm going to come back to commodities. The rally this week, it wasn't just limited to the U.S. markets. We saw stocks across the globe rally. The All World Index was up 2.7%, while emerging markets were up 1.7%. European markets, which were recently traded out of a downtrend last week, they were up 3.3%. Asian and Australian markets were both up 2.8. South American about 3.8, and Canada was up 2.7, while Mexico was up a whopping 5.5% this week. Not bad.
I wonder why.
I don't know. A little strange. They've been pretty poor performance there, so maybe just the one that sold off the hardest was getting the most interest, something like that.
If you're paying a lot of attention, you probably realize that Trump is not as aggressive on the talk about tariffs as he was a week or two ago. They're still there, but I think people are starting to finally realize what he said when this whole tariff thing started. It's a way to influence people's behavior. And now that that's setting in, I think a lot of places like Mexico and Europe are relaxing a little bit, if I might.
Yeah, that's probably true. I think the longer this goes on, the more people realize that the tariff talk is a lot of bluster. It gives Trump leverage, which he really likes to have. He uses the threat, not even the implementation, but the threat of doing something in order to achieve a desired result. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing. And I think if people really are honest with themselves, they'll realize that that's what he did last time and that's what he's doing now.
He's a real deal maker. And we saw that with Saudi Arabia this week.
Yeah.
He said, you know, I might make my first overseas trip to Saudi Arabia, get about $600 billion to invest.
And yep.
It's a very fine line between negotiating and bribing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I would bet that anyone's opinion on that has a whole bunch to do with which side of the aisle they sit on.
The other thing, he did that while simultaneously basically telling them to bring down oil prices.
So. Exactly. Yeah, here's a few little things on my wish list. Much more to come. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And we have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you, again, as usual, by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can call Paul at 904-636-7888. This one's a little offbeat, perhaps. I normally ask things that are numerical, statistical, some things like that, but not always. I was just reviewing some numbers. This is involved with the generational changes, as people like me and my wife and thousands of others, a very big generation called the baby boomers, and we're all getting a little older, and unfortunately, people are dying off every day. That's not the whole point of this thing, but it is absolutely true. And this generation has amassed an incredible amount of wealth. It's partly in real estate, it's in stocks and bonds, it's everywhere you can think of. And over the next few years, it's expected that there will be $124 trillion, 12 zeros for those of you publicly school educated, 12 zeros, are going to be passing to spouses and subsequent generations. $104 trillion. About $21 trillion of that will go to widows who are already considered wealthy because they have $5 million or more in investable assets. What does that have to do with the question? Not very much. I just found it interesting.
I mean, if they're widows, it would have technically been half theirs already. Yeah. Then it just becomes all theirs.
But the fact that they're widows does make a difference. And I'm talking right now to financial advisors and various and sundry people involved in that kind of thing. What are the main two differences in focus when a widow takes over the family fortune? It's not a numerical question. It's two concepts that advisors better be ready for and knowledgeable of and that sort of thing. Two major changes when the widow takes over the family funds. A little different aspect of trivia.
Yeah, important. Sort of the soft side of financial planning.
Yeah, exactly. And because there is one.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
You know, a stockbroker buy and sell stocks, but a financial planner can't buy and sell people.
No.
Doesn't work that way.
No. And in fact, what we do is investments are a part of it. But, man, I think you almost have to be better with people than you do with the numbers.
Absolutely. And it's also true that women are not reluctant to change advisors if they don't feel like they're getting a good shake.
Yeah, definitely.
And I should also add, while we're talking about this, that we really have not had that problem.
We've actually been the recipient of some new clients who had that problem with another advisor.
Mm-hmm. And it's for no other reason except my first rule, which I've always had from the day we got into this. When someone walks in the door, you treat them exactly the same as when someone else walks in the door.
Sure.
Because you never know. We've had people come in that were so destitute, we almost all broke down crying for their situation. Mm-hmm. We've had people walk in the door with gazillions of dollars. And mostly, it's right in between normal people, right off the street, people you would probably, you might even know a few of them, but you discuss normal everyday things with them, and there would never be any indication that they're rich or poor. But the point is, if you treat everybody right, it'll be good. And we do know from experience, much experience, that a lot of people have trouble when they start dealing with the woman of the household, and when they're getting a lot of money moved over to them, they better figure out a way to handle this.
Yeah, and well, and there's no consistent theme these days. A lot of times when we see a new couple, the woman is who handles the finances. Yeah. I would say 60% of the time, probably. The other 40, the man does. Or in the matter of same-sex couples, it's whichever one likes it more.
Females control more wealth. They have more graduate degrees, and they start more businesses than men do. Good morning, Marshall.
Gentlemen, how y'all doing this morning?
Good. Thanks for listening.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
I can remember listening to y'all as you were talking about we got to get the licensing through, and there's this we got to get together.
Yeah.
And
we can't give any advice yet. Yeah,
we got a story about that one too. I'll tell it after we talk.
Well, I did want to disagree with you on something.
Okay.
Well, be my guest.
There is a dumb question.
Okay. Are you about to ask question, it?
The dumb question is the one that you don't ask.
Ah, that's fair.
You are right.
Meaning for those of us out here in the field, the dumb question is the one we sit on, and I have been sitting on one, just forgetting to call you, or I'm on the road or whatever. But okay, so let's say, for instance, I'm in the RMD world now.
Okay.
They're with Grandpa. And I don't want to use it all for QCD. I don't have reason to use it all for that.
Okay.
So I've got money I'm going to have to pay taxes on. I would think that would make a large impact on making the decision to say, I've got room to do some Roth or do some Roth for my wife.
Yep, it sure does. With a bunch of asterisks.
Yes, a bunch. One big one.
Okay.
But I like the way you're thinking. What Marshall's talking about is when you turn 73, you have to start withdrawing from your traditional IRAs, 401ks, any sort of tax-deferred retirement account. And a lot of people have other income and they don't need that money. So they then are taking money out of their retirement accounts and it gets taxed to you as ordinary income. And it really drives up your tax bill because it's all at your marginal rate. It can even push you into a higher tax bracket. So what some people do is when they're in their low income years, they convert their traditional IRA holdings into a Roth and they pay taxes in that year on that conversion. But then when they hit 73 years old, there's no requirement to withdraw anything and you're getting the benefit of the tax-free growth in the Roth. And so it's a great plan. There are some things that it can really hurt you with. And a big one is that it can trigger IRMA tax bracket changes. And what that means is that you can end up paying more for Medicare because you took money out of your traditional IRAs. And everybody hates IRMA, and it's the least favorite tax and the biggest surprise to people when they get slapped with a big year-long tax bill because they did a Roth conversion. People hate it.
Yep. But now, Marshall, you want the catch-22 of the whole thing?
Okay.
You cannot use an RMD to convert to a Roth.
Not then, but you can plan ahead. If you plan ahead, yes.
The fundamental is the first money that comes out of your IRA every year applies to the RMD. That includes the QCD, the Qualified Charitable Distribution. They will allow that. But the next money that comes out up to your RMD limit does not have the ability to be converted to anything. It is taxable income to you, period. Only after your RMD is out can you perform a Roth conversion on any remaining funds. So this is something that requires planning. And what we're seeing is you have the ability to do a QCD at 70 and a half, even if you're waiting to 73 or 4 for an RMD, but you don't wait that long to start your Roth conversions. You really would like to have all your Roth converting done by the time you're 63, which is kind of a little anomaly, but there's a simple reason for that. When you're 65, you might be going on Medicare, and the income they're going to look at is 2 years ago. So if you made a huge Roth conversion at 63, you're going to get nailed with IRMA on your 65th.
Which doesn't mean that it's not a good idea.
No, it doesn't.
That
plan it.
That year that you're going to pay the higher, because it's on a year by year basis, IRMA is evaluated. So if you can justify paying higher, more for Medicare for a year, and the Roth conversion still puts you ahead by whatever percentage later on, then it might still be worth it.
Now I got a question.
Okay,
for Adam.
Maybe I didn't explain this, or I'm not hearing. So okay, let me ask you one more time.
Sure.
Let's just use a number of, there's $5,000 of RMD that I don't need, okay? If I didn't have to take it for RMD, I'd leave it in the account. But I'm going to have to take it.
Okay.
So I take that out. It's now taxable. It's now going to count if I was to get enough IRMA hits me. But now I take that and I put it into Roth that I have the ability to make as a Roth contribution.
You just defined the right way. You have the ability to make it.
Right. But you have to have that ability, and which means you have to have earned income.
Yep.
Yes. Yes. Well, so, and that's part of the challenge.
So I'm sorry, I misunderstood
Steve and I
you.
Both went through the IRMA fund of getting it reconciled with Social Security because they're going to try to get it any way they can.
Oh, yeah.
So I understand. Okay.
Yeah,
we'll see.
But that
was not a dumb question.
Not at all.
Not at all. In fact, it's a very complicated
question. Once it was asked.
Right. Exactly. It's a very complicated question and a great discussion for a radio show and for people who might be looking to do those things and don't currently have a financial advisor.
Yep. Yeah.
You better deal with somebody
who
knows
what they're
doing. Well, I appreciate it, Marshall. Same to you. Did you want to take a quick shot? We got about 30 seconds. What changes when the woman takes over?
He's gone.
Oh, got it. Sorry about that. You can call back, though. All right, we're going to take a quick break and get into all kinds of other topics in just a few moments here. But that whole thing about the Roth conversion is an extremely complicated series
of calculations,
transactions,
yeah.
I guess. And the key to that Start early.
Yeah. And the thing is, what Marshall's question actually was, that you can avoid that situation by doing the planning up front,
right,
by doing the Roth conversions.
Okay. More on this when we get back. Don't go anywhere. We'll take a quick break. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And the trivia question remains out there. Lines are open, 904-222-8255. And what are the major two changes that happen from an advisory standpoint when a widow comes in having had either a share or he did all that, we hear it all, mm-hmm, both involved. But now the focus is going to change most of the time when the widow inherits money. In what ways? And I'll call you right if you get one of them. There are two, but anyone who gets it
seems
right.
Fair.
Yeah, and I want to thank Marshall for that call. That seemingly simple topic is anything but simple. And it's an anything but dumb question. Roth conversions are not what a lot of people they think they are, meaning things to do right before you retire.
Yeah.
Roth conversions have to be carefully planned. In fact, Adam was giving me a real-life example that he's working with a friend on doing for his own situation. And if you understand it early enough and if you plan for it early enough, and we have an excellent case in our client group, if you remember, people who really took the Roth conversion seriously.
Yeah, yep.
And they have a very, very substantial amount of money that would be coming out in tax, and now it sits in and isn't taxed.
Yeah.
And when it comes out, it won't be taxed.
And they're going to have a pension in retirement and
right,
not a whole lot of need for income. So it's really an ideal scenario. Yeah. And this topic is probably one of the most complicated financial, mm-hmm, personal financial planning topics that you can address. And there's so many variables that go into it. It needs to be really analyzed and done on a case-by-case basis, because there's not a right answer. People who are on, I'll just bring up TikTok or any social media, who are saying that this is the way to go, that is not a one-size-fits-all financial plan. You really need to look at this.
You know, and if you go back a couple of decades when I was very newly in this business, I was probably the most anti-Roth person who ever lived, for the simplest of simple reasons. I don't trust the government.
To not change the rules.
Yep. The Roth IRA was guaranteed forever, never to be taxed. There was one pool of money out there among we the people that was supposedly not taxed so far and never would be, and that's the earnings on a Roth IRA.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't believe that Congress would leave that alone. And then a funny thing happened. People started loving it. And when people loved it, they started putting money in it. And when they kept putting money in it, it got so big that Congress would be summarily fired if they tried to mess with that. I am now a proponent.
Well, I think there's a number of things that you have to realize with the Roth too, and it's not this amazing thing that it can be, but it's very hard to take advantage of it, because the people who can contribute to a Roth typically don't make much money and may not be able to contribute to a Roth. And so the ideal scenario for a Roth is someone who's in their 20s and making a small amount of money, but can max out their Roth. And who in their 20s can do that? Yeah. Almost no one.
No, 10 or 12% tax bracket means you don't have much cash flow and everybody's fighting for it.
Exactly. And so then when you get more established and have a larger income, you run into the upper income limits, and you then might think, okay, I'll do a backdoor, but almost everybody has a 401k or a traditional IRA, which negates all the benefit of that.
401k doesn't.
Sorry. You're right. Any kind of IRA
right,
will. And so it's a lot more difficult. And the other thing about a Roth conversion is if you do that and you have to pay the taxes on it, it takes a while to make up that tax that you just paid. So it's not right for everyone, especially people later in life. You may never reap the benefits unless you're looking at it as your kids are going to inherit the Roth and then it maybe saves them some taxes. So there's a whole host of considerations there. And it isn't this like one-to-one comparison where the Roth is X times better than a traditional.
Yeah, and if you go back not too many years, it was a total slam dunk. Convert as much as you want. Wait until you do your taxes after the first of the year. And whatever taxes you owe that are above what you wanted to pay, you recharacterize part of the conversion back. And it never happened. That's what recharacterized meant. It never happened. Well, now it happened. And if whatever you convert between now and December 31 is converted, and there is no turning back on December 31st at midnight. So you cannot get a do-over or a tweak. It used to be fun for people like Adam and me. We'd work with people and say, well, let's go over a couple of grand, just make sure we get every penny of tax benefit out of it, and we'll just recharacterize come February, March, or whatever, when we know the exact number, and then
no more.
They took it away.
Mm-hmm.
So, back to Good Morning, Craig.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I want to take a stab at your trivia question.
Well, please do.
Steve, repeat it one more time.
Sure. What are the two areas of focus that tend to change when a widow inherits the money and comes into the advisory situation and you start talking about goals and that sort of thing? There are two specific things that are generally more important to women than to men. Name one.
I would say to go more from growth-focused to an income-focused.
That has not been shown to be based on your sex at the time. It is very important for people in general and would be an excellent answer, except for the fact that I've tailored it to women.
Okay.
I gotta use a little bit of clever stuff. Otherwise, everybody gets it too easy, and then we don't get any more
calls. Well, that's true. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, enjoy the show, gentlemen. Thank you very much, and stay warm.
Thank you. Same to you, and we appreciate your call. That does happen. The growth income change.
Yeah, but in my experience, that is not gender related at all.
No,
it's
not at all.
An interest of couples. It's an interest of one part of the couple, but it's not based on which gender they are.
Yeah, the establishment of a lifetime income is probably I could say a lot of things are probably the number one focus of people who are doing financial planning and investing. It's certainly in any list of the top five. Having an income stream is in there for sure.
Yep, definitely.
And that can involve any number of things, but certainly your portfolio focus is part of it. All right, anything else in the market that we need to talk about today?
It was interesting. We saw interest rates were pretty much unchanged, although they did drop early in the week, and then they rose with the market throughout the week. So that was a bit unusual. Usually when interest rates go up, the market goes the other way, but not this week. We did see oil drop 3.5% during the week. That is a positive thing for the market. So that could have driven it a little bit. We saw some other news. We've been calling this the AI bull market. And this week we saw that is probably accurate. The combination of SoftBank, Oracle, and OpenAI announced over $100 billion investment in domestic data centers. And then Meta, Zuckerberg, he also plans to spend $60 billion on AI capital investments this year. So,
see what the forecasters are saying about him now?
No.
That he's going to be the first trillionaire in very few years.
Wow, that's crazy.
Isn't it? And if it's true that he's kind of switching over to our side, good.
And then
all for him.
I also saw this list that since the election, the sectors that have outperformed are quantum computing, AI, small nuclear reactor producers, space stocks, and private prison stocks.
I hadn't thought about that one. The other ones we've been talking about in the office, and I think they're pretty common sense. But the private prisons, that's interesting because a lot of places have shut them down.
Yeah, and it is interesting when you enforce laws, you do need more prisons.
Yeah. We should make a brief mention. Well, I'll do this after, because as we say, callers go first. Good morning, Will.
Good morning.
What's happening?
I would like to take a stab at your trivia question, please.
Shoot.
I would guess that the distribution of assets, because if I were everything's planned on me predeceasing my wife, and then since the surviving spouse won't have to worry about taking care of their spouse, I'm guessing who the money goes to.
It is not specifically one of those things, although it's tangential to one of them, but it's not close enough that I can give it to you.
Good try, though.
Because that's purely a estate planning thing, and one thing that people should know is that too many people actually lose a spouse before they start any estate planning, and that is a bad thing. So I'm glad you brought it up. It's a wonderful topic for this show. Well, and for
have a great weekend,
planning.
And I'll keep listening.
Thanks for the call, Will. Appreciate it.
The other quick thing that has been going on in the market, earnings season started, although it starts pretty slow, but banks and so on have been coming in. And the numbers have been great. 80% beat rate on earnings. And
Netflix blew the doors off.
Oh, my gosh. They're just going crazy. It was 80% and then 68% for revenue beats, which is kind
strong.
Of strong. It's good.
Yeah. It's on the high side of average.
Yeah, exactly. So all in all, if this keeps up, concurrently with that, forward guidance is very weak right now with only 4% looking up. That is not a surprise because the stocks that beat are getting rewarded in this market. So the CEOs are downplaying expectations, hoping they can knock them dead after the next season or after the next quarter and thereby get a big bump. So they're probably buying in between. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we still have the trivia question out there. People are taking some shots at it. What are the two main focuses that change when a widow comes in with the family money over what the family was doing or the man was doing or whatever? And it's a pretty consistent pattern. I just ran it past Adam, and he says, yeah, it even makes sense.
Yeah, it did.
So keep thinking that way, and somebody might just come up with it. All right, something that I got reminded, I can't remember why I got reminded this week, but something came across my desk and kind of jolted my memory on this. We've talked a lot about securing your data, and we've talked about the LifeLock, do you need it or not, things like that, where you can prevent for free, you can prevent your house deed and so on from getting interfered with by people with a free service that the county gives. We've also talked, probably less frequently, but just as importantly, about the credit reporting agencies. And everybody pretty much knows about the three big ones, the Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And at each of these, with very little hassle, either online, on the phone, or whatever, they will freeze your credit. And then when anybody wants to know your credit score or anything like that, say you're applying for a car loan, anything of that nature, they will have to go to one of them and get your numbers. But it's locked. It's frozen. So you deal with these people and you say, who are you going to use? Which one of the agencies? And when are you going to do it? And you thaw your credit, as they call it, for a brief period of time. While the person calls and gets your numbers, it's immediately refrozen, and then nobody can do anything to you that you don't know about. Well, there's actually four credit reporting agencies, and most people do not know about Innovis, Innovis. It is the little brother to the big three, but it knows the same things, and it does the same things. Therefore, you should freeze it, just like you do the other ones. So I got on there this week, and one by one, because everybody's an individual, so if you're married, you go through your own and your spouse's. So I went in there and froze mine, and then I froze Sarah's. The whole thing took almost no time, and they sent back a written confirmation in the mail with a PIN number that you need to open it up again. They act just exactly like the big three, but they're the little ones. So if you are the kind of person that believes that a credit freeze is a good idea, then go check out Innovus and do the same thing there. If you're not the kind of person who thinks that a credit freeze is a good idea, you better come to the office and we'll tell you some stories, because it's a very good idea. I know there are times in your life when you're doing a lot of shuffling around and credit reporting and all that, but you can't be too careful. They're everywhere out there in the internet. In fact, I just posted a blog about this whole thing on our website, and I had forgotten about the little fourth one. I don't know, maybe it was an article by Clark Howard or somebody like that. This is, remember, there are actually four of these things.
You actually brought it up on the show last weekend, I believe.
I thought I did.
And that was the first I had heard of it. I didn't even realize there was a fourth.
Yeah, nobody knows that name.
No.
There is, and it's important. Any way they can find to get your information, they're going to find it.
Mm-hmm.
If these people put the time and energy and intelligence into doing something good, the world would be much better off completely, including them probably. But, you know, if they wouldn't do these things unless it's successful.
Do you know what Wallet Hub recently ranked as the best state to start a business in 2025?
I do not.
It would be your home state of Florida.
Huh.
Yeah. A pretty nice accolade for, I think it's, let's see, it's overall ranked first, small business growth is fourth, labor cost is 16th, availability of human capital is 13th, work week length is 21st, and cost of living is 25th.
Hmm.
So that led to the overall number one ranking. Not bad.
No. People are flocking in here. Not doing that in California, are they?
They are not.
Yeah, that trip that Trump took to California yesterday was eye-opening in many respects. The Army Corps of Engineers had told these people they can get a permit to clean up their lot in 18 months.
Jeez.
What?
It's unreal. You look at some of those pictures, just the Palisades, it's just
unbelievable.
It's crazy. I've never seen
anything like that.
And Malibu.
Yeah. I mean, you're not talking about some cheap real estate or anything. That's Malibu.
Yeah.
And you know, when Trump went out there and he said, that's 18 months too much.
Yeah, definitely.
And had Mayor Bass there, and she was thinking a week. And she, no, a week's a long time. Now, right now.
Mm-hmm.
That was great. Imagine the people that are going to try to rebuild. Some of them probably were insured. There are a bunch of them that weren't.
Yeah, I saw a great video by a famous realtor out there saying mm-hmm. that in the Palisades, he thinks that 50 to 70% of the people won't return. And his logic was that a lot of those people had inherited houses over time and had apparently in California, when you inherit a house, you inherit the tax basis or something like that.
Oh.
So they were paying, you know, a couple thousand a year on yeah. something worth many millions of dollars. And so they couldn't afford it. B, a lot of the people that live there in Palisades had families, and those with kids who will now have to enroll in a new school district, who are maybe 7 or 8 years old now. And by the time they can move back, might be in their teenage years yeah. and they're not going to want to leave at wherever they relocate to.
Imagine how many people had their entire net worth, which was in seven digits,
mm-hmm.
gone.
Incredible.
And a lot of these people lost their jobs because things burned down. They have no ability to get a job because there's nothing there. If you're lucky enough to have a place to stay and you're a builder or something like that, you know, a carpenter or a tradesman with good skills, you probably could do very well, assuming you can make arrangements for your family somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Which,
what a mess.
Yeah, I don't know what the options are in Southern California, but obviously there's a lot of other places they can move to. But again, that all requires a lot of money, uprooting your family. It doesn't seem like there's an easy solution for anyone in this situation.
Rent.
Right.
What does it take to start from scratch on a house? And, of course, the powers that be out there had caused many insurers to leave the state, including State Farm. And those people did it because they couldn't make a profitable deal with a homeowner. And, you know, it's expensive, yes, but you've got to let people pay the dues. And we've talked quite a few times lately about the California system that in Florida we would call Citizens. California calls it FAIR because they do that all the time. They use terms that don't apply. But their FAIR system was so underfunded, it could only handle about 10%. Now, this is so egregious that I don't know where it's going to go. I have a funny feeling that everybody listening to me right now will wind up paying for it somehow through the federal government.
I'm sure, like always.
You know, on a local level, I don't know if you were paying attention during this time. It was mostly in the 90s, I think. Black Creek used to flood frequently.
Yeah.
And the people who weren't on stilts would lose their homes, and we'd rebuild them. And then it would flood again, and they'd lose their homes again. Well, finally somebody said, no more. Now they're on stilts. Now we don't have to rebuild Black Creek every year. So, and when you can have a 100-year flood every 2 or 3 years, there's something wrong. Anyway, where California will go, I don't know. But in Florida, one thing about Florida, yes, it has lots of problems, but it doesn't have those massive unexpected fires. And you got a hurricane going, you get a little warning. All right. Enough of that. Headlines. I hate people who do this. I've brought these people up before. On Breitbart's website, I read this week. Man who predicted Trump victory sees a 40% market crash caused by AI.
That's got to be a sponsored article.
Oh, it is. Okay. And there's a light gray banner above the picture.
Yeah.
And in the same light gray is printed advertisement. Okay. I had to go back and find it because it was so inobtrusive. Well, then I clicked on the site. I wasn't going to click any further than that, but I went there. And it says not only did he predict the Trump victory, he predicted the exact count on the electoral count. And I said, oh, man, this guy's got to be fantastic. No, not really. When you see things like that, to me at least, in my business and such, I get so distraught by these things because it can make people do stupid things in the market. Always tell yourself when you read something like this, 15 minutes ago, I never gave a thought to a 40% market crash, much less caused by AI. Why should I now? So if you want to click on it, you'll get there. And if, of course, he's selling a newsletter. He's probably hawking gold, all those things. It's just the most ridiculous thing. And I hope one of the things that people take away from listening to the show for all the years that we've been doing it is to cut out the noise that is all over the 24/7 media. It is not a pretty sight. When the women come in having inherited the money, the focus generally will change a bit. The number one, it'll change to philanthropy. Women are very, very prone to having a giving plan for their particular charities or whatever. And the other one, a little less obvious, but sustainability. And they're concerned about investing in things that are sustainable, which is a term that you can love or hate, but it's not a bad idea. It's also sustainability of family money, which is why Will was close. See you next week, same time. Yeah, this is the Van Weef.